So today we want to learn a little bit about the mitzvah of Shmitas Ksofim on Shvius. This is a little bit of a different dimension of the mitzvah of Shvius. And in fact, what we're going to see is that there's a mitzvah saseh involved here, a mitzvah lo saseh. So we're going to use this Sefer Dinei Shvius, which I photocopied for you, Perkhov test, just as a little bit of an introduction or an overview. And then what we want to do, which is also in your packet, is to take a look in the Rambam. Mitzvah saseh min haTorah lahashmit b'shnas hashmita eskol hachovos. Hein hachovos shebichsav v'hein shabal peh. So it means Shimon borrowed money from Reuven. And there are two possibilities. And the same din applies in both cases. Either Shimon borrowed money and he didn't give a shtar, or he did give a shtar. Either it was an oral loan, or they wrote it down in a document, in which case Shimon the lover gives Reuven the Malva a shtar. Reuven is now the Malva. He has a debt which he normally, if not for Shvius, would collect from the Lova, but comes along the seventh year. We'll see exactly which point in the seventh year, and that breaks up the chov. That's called Shmitas Ksofim. And it's a mitzvah saseh. The Rambam actually dedicates, as you'll soon see in the pages I gave you, an entire chapter in Hilchos Shmita, the ninth chapter, to the laws of this mitzvah saseh, lahashmit b'shvius es kol hachovos. Now, what's the chiddush here that even if it's a milva b'shtar, nevertheless, Shmita is still neshamit? Why would I entertain the possibility and distinguish between milva bal peh and milva b'shtar? Anything come to your mind? The basic difference between milva b'shtar and milva bal peh is what's called shibud. That means there are two types of shibudim. There's a shibud aguf, which means I'm committed to pay you back. I'm the loan, I borrowed money, you're the lender. I have to do whatever I have to do, go to all ends of the world to repay the chov. And that applies in every kind of a chov, in every kind of a milva. But a milva b'shtar upgrades the situation, gives the malva extra kochos, extra powers, in that he has a lien on my karka, on my real estate, which means that if I go ahead and sell that karka, then my malva, so far as the halva preceded the sale, he has rights to go over to the buyer. And if I, the lover, default on the loan, then he, the malva, can actually confiscate the karka from the buyer. Now the buyer has rights to come back to the, you know, to the seller and say, look, I bought and I paid you full price for your karka. I may have paid millions, and now the karka was confiscated, was taken away from me. I'm left without anything. So that's a different issue. But as far as the power of the malva to collect his chov, he now has ownership rights, again, quasi-ownership, it's not complete ownership rights, but he has shibud in the karka. And that reminds us of something else. What would be the highest level of a chov, the highest level of power, so to speak, in the hands of the malva to collect his chov? Even beyond a shtar. What would be even better than a shtar for the malva? Correct. That's called a mashkon. And in fact, we're going to soon see that in the case of a chov with a mashkon, which means that the lova actually handed over to the malva some sort of object, which now the malva, so to speak, owns until the lova redeems it. That's called bal chov kodem mashkon. In such a case, there is no halach of shmita. Shmita doesn't have. Once we jack up, we upgrade the power of the malva to collect his chov to the highest level, and we jack it up to the level of mashkon, such a chov becomes so powerful, it's almost as if the malva has the money in his back pocket in the shape and the form of the mashkon. In such a case, Shemitah can't be mashani. So we might have thought that in between the two extremes, between the highest level, which is mashkon, and the lowest level, which is milv bal peh, right down the middle comes milv b'shtar, where although the malva doesn't own anything in the strict sense, he doesn't have a mashkin that's under his possession, it's in his backyard, that he doesn't have. But he does have a shibud, which means he can collect the karka of the lova if the lova defaults. We might have thought that that's a high-powered enough halva, as far as the malva is concerned, to obviate, circumvent the din of Shemitah. But that's what we're saying now. No, unless it's a mashkon situation, then the malva has to realize, he has to understand, that by extending this loan, the loan is subject to be broken up, and his rights to collect are completely null and void by Shemitah. Again, you might ask the question, why is this Malva crazy enough to extend a loan to someone whom he knows he won't be able to collect that chov because of Shemitah? And for that, we're going to learn a separate parsha in the Torah. In fact, if you fast forward for a moment, two pages, do you see a page that says Kuf Samaches? Should be the last page in your booklet. Do you see that? I think it's the very last page.
Yeah.
On the left side of the page, it'll say Prosbol, but we're not up to Prosbol. We're doing the right side of the page. And here, the Psukim actually give a whole introduction to someone who has the funds to extend to his friend as a loan, but he refuses to do so because he knows that the Shemitah year is around the corner. And the Torah, you know, admonishes such a person for hesitating. He says, Ki yeh im levavecha blial, that your heart is saturated with evil, because you're going to declare when this lova comes to ask for halva, to extend him a loan, kar v'shnas hashem v'shnas hashmita. I'm not in the mood to extend a loan that I know is going to be subject to Shemitah. And your eye, so to speak, is evil. It means it's detrimental, and you don't want to extend this loan. So the Chofetz Chaim is famous for saying, which you'll see in the next paragraph, that we should really pay attention to the Torah's use in this context of the word blial, because we find the word blial in another context, the same exact word, and that's in the parsha of Ir HaNidachas, which is a city that people go out and they entice the members of the city, rove of the city, to worship an idol. Says the Chafetz Chaim, Tzarech Adam Yisrael Lassim El Libo, a person should make sure that he contemplates. Ilu Ba Ish Ke Erko, Umechaneo So B'Shem Blial, what should be his response if another human being would call him Blial? Hey, you're a Blial. He would certainly be indigent. He would get up and he would scream and yell. Even if he didn't do it publicly, no one heard. She was not publicly humiliated. How could you use such a strong language and accuse me of being Belial? How much would a person feel? He should be so anguished and upset in his heart. Kshatora calls him a Blial. What a cherpa and a klima it is. And if it's not in this world, it's in the next world, the eternal world. And Chazal say that, take a look, where else do we find the word Blial? Not just someone who is nimna, means he prevents himself from extending a loan because the Shemitah is coming around. But the Ir HaNidacha situation, Yatsu Anoshim B'nei Blial, which are a group of people that are violating the worst Avera. I mean, one of the Gimel Averas of Yehori Val Yavra Vodazor. Not only that, they're enticing others. That's called a Mediach, right? It's somebody who brings others to violate Avodah Zorah. That's where the Torah only in that context, and in one other case, uses the word Blial. Blial is not used very frequently. The Torah guards that word, you know, very carefully, only uses it when it's absolutely necessary. And it used it here in this context of a person who has the wherewithal to extend the loan. He refuses to do so because the Shemitah is coming around. Now the question is, what is this mitzvah of Shemitah? What does it mean? How does it express itself in concrete terms? Does it mean I have to do something? Do I have to get up and actively do something? I'm the malva, and I have to be mashmit my chov, all my chov. So what do I do? So if you take a look back at the perek, he says l'rov rishonim shmita sof mi afkata de malka, which means that it's automatic. The Torah itself, the melech, the king, meaning the melech malka amlochim, he itself is mafkia the chov. Ain't sorasha malva yomar. There's no need for any sort of declaration on the part of the Malva Shemeshame Chova that he's cutting off his Chov. Now I no longer have rights to collect this Chov. No, he doesn't have to make such a declaration. HaChovos Nishmatim Aleim, they're automatically completely nulled and voided. But if you notice, he writes L'Rov HaRishonim, implying that not everyone agrees to this. So I did a little research and I wanted to find out who has another opinion, a variation. And I looked in the Derech Amunah of the Grach Kinevsky, and at the beginning of Perek Tes, In the Bir Halacha, which is his analysis in depth of Halacha, he quotes the Das HaYareim. The Yareim, if you don't know it, was one of the Bali HaTosvos. He was one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz by the name Rabbi Elazar Metz. And he's a very, very serious, source or posek to contend with. And he writes that Ein HaChov Nishmat Me'elav. The chov is not automatically nulled and voided. Ela in kain amar lo, the malv has to turn to the loaf with a decoration and say meshamet anias hachov. So, in other words, the Urayim sees the mitzvah aseh of shmita as a positive, active mitzvah, which has to be fulfilled bikum vaseh by the malv making a declaration. And if the Malva doesn't make a declaration to be Meshamik the Chov, then the Chov is not automatically cancelled. The Malva, has to cancel the Chov.
What happens to the other guy who pays it back? Isn't that automatic to a certain extent?
So what I want to read to you is the Derech Hamuna. The Derech Hamuna says the following. The Derech Hamuna wants to know what happens if a person, a Malva in this case, collects his Chov even though there's a Shemitah law. So he violates a law, does he get Malkus? So he says that there's no Malkus here, because this law is not something that you violate. Meaning, he says the following, let me read to you his language. He says, Halav hazeh, this is first explanation why there's no malchus, is lefishu nitan lehishavam. You remember the case of losigzol, of gzela. There's no malchus for gzela. And why is that? Because the Torah says you have to return the stolen object. The heishim is like gzela shagazal. So the Gemara Masechta Makis says that there's a category, classification of lavim, which don't get malchus because the lav hanitan lehishavam. And here too, the malve is going to have to return the chov to the lova, because the lova, has no obligation to pay him. So if the malve actually collected the chov, he illegally is holding on to the money of the lova, and he has to return that money. And since he has to return that money and fix up the lav that he violated, that's because the lav hanitam li shavan, there's no malchus. However, he says, v'das ha'yireim, the chov she'over alav hashvius ein rashoy halov liakvo. He says that even though shvius passed, the lov has no rights to hold on to the chov. He's got to pay back the malva, unless the malva is meshamet the chov. El al pi hamalva shekolz manchlo hishmito hamalva. As long as the malva was not meshamet the chov, chayev halov lefroa. The lov still remains chayev to pay it back.
Violate anything by paying it back?
So wait, let me just, before you ask your question, let me just finish the presentation. Ella, what happens in such a case? Again, the malver was not meshamik the chov, correct? And the lover is obligated to be porea the chov, according to the Sefer Yireim. So what happens now? Ella, the lover has recourse. Halove mazminis amalve lebezdin. The lover can subpoena the malva into court. Ubezdin yechayvu es hamalve lomar meshamet ani esachov. Bezdin can coerce the malve to make the declaration of meshamet esachov. V'im eino rotze yechfu bezdin. They can actually physically coerce him. So this is what's called kofin al hamitzvahs. Meaning, if a person refuses to fulfill his mitzvah, Bezdin, again, this is not a very politically correct democratic philosophy, but in our law, Bezdin can force him to do so. And this is exactly what Bezdin is going to do. So again, on the one hand, the lover remains chayv to be porer the chov. On the other hand, the lover has recourse to sue the malva in Bezdin, and Bezdin will force the malva, whether he likes it or not, to make that declaration, mishamet ani esachov. Then he has a whole discussion, which is not relevant to us, what kind of Bezdin do you need to implement this law of kfiya, to actually coerce him to be meshamit the chov. For example, the bati din in Eretz Yisrael, bati din in chutzah, the smuchim, and so forth and so on. That's not for us now. Avol rov rishonim chalkim, most rishonim disagree. Usvir lehu, They hold shachov nishmat me'elav. The chov is automatically canceled. Beinam amalva rotsa, beinam eino rotsa. There's no need for the lova to assume that until the malva does this active hashmata of the chov, he, the lova, remains chayav to pay back the chov. He doesn't have to pay back the chov. Comes the seventh year, and it cancels the chov. He says, he has a whole discussion, if the lova went ahead and took a shmua, that he would be porea the chov, whether such a shmua would be chal. Because a shmua is only chal when you have an obligation to pay back, and you take a shmua, you'll pay it back. But here he doesn't have any obligation to pay it back, because the chov is completely gone. Fine. That's again, we're just touching on the tip of the iceberg here, but since he mentioned the sheet of rope we showed him of Afkata de Malka, that the chov is automatically cancelled, I wanted to show you that that's the low pashut, that there is a sheet of the rain that until the malva, and we'll force the malva if need be, but until the malva declares. So it comes out that the declaration of the malva, according to the Urayim, is a kumvaseh. That it's this mitzvah of Shemitah with regard to Ksafim, with regard to Halvos and Chovos, is an active mitzvah that has to be fulfilled. It's like, what should I say, the mitzvah of tefillah, the mitzvah of kriyat shema. I have to actively, you know, recite my prayers. Here I as the malva, have to actively declare a shemitah of the chol. So that's what he writes here, the second paragraph, according to most Rishonim. Ain tzarich shamal v'yomer shemesham in achov el kol achovus nishmatim me aleihem. Automatically, they are null and void. Now, here's an interesting question: When I use the word lung, what do you associate with the lung? What did the malv actually give to the lover?
Money,
right?
Dollars, yeah.
What if he didn't give him money? Suppose that he gave him an object. He says shmitas achovos. Koleles gam echolim. He gave him food stuff. She'ena muhzarim mi'atzma. In other words, let's say I give you food and it's going to perish. So I don't expect you to return that very food because, you know, a week later it's spoiled. But you have to return food to replace the food that I gave you. So I get a loaf of bread. So a week later you go into the bakery, you buy a loaf of bread, and you give it back to me. He says that's also a chov. And even though it's not currency, nevertheless, the laws of chovos control and govern that chov no less than a monetary chov in hard cash. Lachem, kevat shehilva lizulaso dvar machal. If Reuven lent to Shimon not currency but rather a foodstuff, kishemagia zman hashmata, when the seventh year comes and it's mshamit chov nishmat chov. And this we'll see also in the Rambam. Let's see if we can find the Rambam for a second. Do you want to take a look at the Rambam which I gave you? You see, in Halacha Vav, the Rambam writes, Shvius mishametis amalve, as amilve, afilu milve b'shtar, sheish b'achrayis nechosim. Achrayis nechosim is a synonymous term to shibud nechosim. Harayis mishamet. Fine. Then we're going to get to the case of Mashkon. We're not ready for that. But where's the case where he lent him something other than currency? Does everybody see it? If you're flipping through the Rambam, your eye might catch it. All right. I'm not finding it right now. Hopefully we'll see it soon. Let's go on. Bizmanazeh. What's the story with Shemitas Ksof and Bizmanazeh? So if you recall, we had a gigantic controversy about Shemitas Karka, whether Shemitas Karka applies to Bizmanazeh going to the Torah or it's only the Rabbanon. And we came to the conclusion that's codified by the Chazon Ish based on most of the Rishonim, there's an issue in the Rambam, but that Shemitas Karka Bizmanazeh is the Rabbanon. Do we apply the same logic to Shemitas Ksofim? Do we say that Shemitas Ksofim like Shemitas Karka in our time is the Rabbanon? So if you take a look in the Rambam, this Halacha Beis, which you have on the front cover of your page, the Rambam says, Ein Shemitas Ksofim noheges min haTorah, elo bizman shayovel noheg. So Shemitas Ksofim, says the Rambam, is contingent upon Yovel. Sheyesham Shmita's karka, meaning on Yovel, all the karkos revert to the original owners, that even though they were sold. And Der Hamuda points out in his footnote number 8 that the Rambam holds that not only is Shmita's ksafim to Rabbanon b'smanaseh, but Shmita's karka b'smanaseh is the Rabbanon. Again, he has a long discussion about this in the Bir Aloch, because the Kesef Mishnah thinks that according to the Rambam, Shmita's karka is the Raisa b'smanaseh. But certainly, according to the Rambam, Shmita's ksafim is the Rabbanon b'smanaseh, because we don't have the Yovel. Why don't we have the Yovel? Because the Yovel is dependent upon Kol Yoshvel Olel. And that the Rambam is going to codify in Perek Yud, the very next Perek of Hilchos Shmita. The Derech Hamun is interested in analyzing the case of Bais Sheni, because Bais Sheni, even though the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael that was engendered by Ezra Nechemiah in the second Aliyah is D'oraisa, but nevertheless, as far as Yovel is concerned, Yovel is only the Rabbana, because only a small fraction of the people of Israel lived and made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael at the time by Bais Sheni. So he says, Lefi zeh gam bezman et Bais Sheni lo noag shmita el midrabbana. Interesting. Fine. So in our time, for sure, Shmita's Ksofen is only the Rabbana. Does anybody know why the Rabbanon instituted Shmita's Ksofim if we don't have Yovel today? And furthermore, does anybody know which institution that we're familiar with in our lives is only feasible, halakhically acceptable, because Shmita Bizman Azeh, Shmita's Ksofim is the Rabbanon?
Banking.
Well, banking, are you talking about ribis? You're talking about heterisco?
Talking about coming into heterisco.
Oh, but what's the parallel?
About mortgages and borrowing and loans, we can't have any of this stuff without.
Right, but how do we circumvent the laws of Shmita? It was an institution that was
Prusbul, right? Prusbul.
So all of the laws of Prusbul, which are very long and complicated, maybe some of which we'll touch on today, they're all standing on the shoulders of the fact that Shmita is soft as mine as it is there abundant.
Why even just the rest of the game?
No, concept. No. We wouldn't be able to use Prusbul. We would be able to do something else, which is called Moser Sharos of Lebezdin. But you'd actually have to... We don't do this. We don't ask the Malveh to collect all his Sharos and hand them over to Bezdin. We just sign a Prusbul. That was the Takot of Hillel. But on a Doraisa level, a Shmita's Ksofim with Doraisa, the only way that a Malveh could circumvent the law of Shmita's Ksofim would be if he gave his Shtar over to Bezdin, which he's not willing to do in most cases. Prusbul, he doesn't mind. So that's what Hillel Zaken instituted, but only because Shmita Bizman is Ezra Abonon. And he says, what moved the Chachamim to institute or reinstitute Shmita Zaken? Shelotashtakach Torah Shmita Misra. This reminds me of what we're doing in Sukkah now, if you remember that, whether or not if he doesn't have an Esri, he should take a different min, Shelotashtakach Torah Ezra Misra. L'rova poskim mitzvah zuno eges v'chol makom bein ba'aretz bein b'chutzlar. It's interesting. This is a fundamental distinction between Shmita's karka that we've been studying and Shmita's ksofim. That most poskim maintain that Shmita's karka, although it's limited to Eretz Yisrael, Shmita's ksofim applies even in chutzlar. And the reason for that is simple. It's not a mitzvah actually of a karka. Right? The Mishnah in the second Kiddush, the second parak, formulates, codifies which mitzvahs depend upon Eretz Yisrael and are limited to Eretz Yisrael, kol mitzvah shechovas karka. That's what we call Zerayim. Interesting that the Rambam integrated Shmita's Ksofim into Zerayim, even though it's not a chovas karka, and it applies even in Chutz Laretz. It's what we call a chovas haguf, like tefillin, which applies in Chutz Laretz, and tzitzis applies in Chutz Laretz, and tefillah and kriyat shma and so forth. And therefore, we could have anticipated that Shmita's Ksofim should come under a different perek, and not only that, even a different section of the Rambam. The Rambam obviously sees a connection between the two laws of Shemitah, the mitzvah of Shemitah's karka and the mitzvah of Shemitah's ksofim. And therefore he codifies the mitzvah of Shemitah's ksofim at the very end of Hilchos Shemitah. But that's an interesting question, why the Rambam did that, and he integrated the two Shemitahs together. L'rov ha-poskim mitzvah zu no'egis b'chol mokum bein b'aretz bein b'chutz lach nation mitzvah zu ein t'liya b'aretz elahi chovas ha-guf. Now the question I wanted to raise with you is, are women obligated in Shmita's Ksofim? I saw that the Derech Emunah addresses this question. And the reason why he has a havmin that women should be exempt from this mitzvah is because women are exempt from what category of mitzvahs? Shas my brother, it's a time-bound mitzvah, there's a time element in this mitzvah as well. It applies only once in 7 years. And he comes to the conclusion that women should be obligated in this mitzvah because it's connected to a lav. You know, the women are equal to men as far as all losases are concerned. And the Rambam opens up Perek Tes Mi'ot L'Shemitah, we open with the following: Mitzvah Se L'Hashmit Amal V'Mishvir, Amal V'Mishvirs. And then he goes on and says, V'atoveh Chov, if during Shemitah he decides to be Toveh, to the Baal to insist on the law of paying the Chov, of our Lo Tase. So there's a flip side to this. It's not just an essay, but it's also a Lo Tase. When we have a twin group of an essay and a losase, then we know that women are included. For example, Shabbos and Yom Tov, because Shabbos and Yom Tov is both an essay and a losase. Possibly Nosar, right? Because Nosar is a mitzvah of burning, and there's also a losase not to leave the Nosar. So even though that mitzvah might be connected to Zman, after 2 days, after 1 day, whatever it might be, nevertheless it's got a lot to it. And there are many, many other cases where you have a mitzvah saseh that's bolstered or supported by a lo saseh, and therefore women aren't included. Lefi ani hasdaiti, I would have said something else, that this mitzvah is incumbent upon women because it's not your classical mitzvah saseh shazman grum. It's fundamentally different than a classical mitzvah saseh. And the reason for that is because, at least according to Rov Rishonim, as opposed to the Reyim, this mitzvah doesn't require an active participation to be meshamit the chol. But rather, afkata the malka, the seventh year comes along and it breaks up the chol. Once it breaks up the chol, the mela, the malka, has no rights, he has no recourse to collect this chol. So let's say, for example, a woman extends a loan. So what's she going to say? She's going to come to the shmita and she's going to say, no, I'm not willing to do a kind of mitzvah shmita because I'm a woman. And it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grum. But if this, what's called afkata de malka, which means the chov is broken up automatically, you know, there's no positive, active fulfillment of this mitzvah. We're not asking the malva to in any way implement this mitzvah. We're only asking him not to collect the chov, and if he tries to collect the chov, he violates a law. That should be applicable even to women as well. The source and the root of this mitzvah is really the dini mamonis aspect, you know, the nature of the halva, and specifically the hashmata of the halva, and that should apply to women as well as it does to men. In other words, what happens when you have a mitzvah, the likes of which is really a din mamon? It's not the mitzvah that engenders the din mamon engenders the mitzvah. And the din mamon here is that the shmita comes along on the seventh year and it breaks up the chalav. The lov is no longer committed to pay this chov because the chov doesn't exist. That should apply to men and women as well. In any event, the bottom line is that what we're learning here crosses all the lines here, and it only applies midrabanan. It applies even in chutz laretz and even to nashim. La halacha, this is number 8 on your page. Shvius mishametes b'sofa. Remember, we raised the question at the beginning: at what point in the shmita year does the Shemitah of Ksafim get activated to break up the Chov? And the answer is at the end of the year. Klomar, what this means is, Zman Shemitah Ksafim Hu B'Sof Shnas HaShemitah. He's going to give an example from Tavshin Ben Dalet, that was a few Shemitahs ago. But how do we know this, that Shemitah breaks up the Chov only at the end of the year? The Torah says, V'Kates Sheva Shonim, at the end of the seventh year, the Moed Shnas HaShmita, when the Shnas HaShmita is coming to its fruition, and then it says Bechag HaSukos, the Lomdu Chazal Miketz Perushol Li'achar HaShmita, that the word Miketz, it means after the Shmita has completed itself. So we're actually technically in the 8th year, and that's when the Shmita kicks in and actively breaks up the Chol. Slachain, what's the import of this? The Meshach Shnas HaShmita, during the entire course of the Shemitah year, Mutal Ligvos Kol Chov Sheyesh Etz Chaver. No, it's Ruvek collect his Chov from Shemitah. He doesn't violate any law of Lo Yigos. But the Achar Shnas HaShemitah, Asu Lo Ligvos Kol Chov. Once the Shemitah completes itself, Then the 7th year is over, we've entered into the 8th year, Rosh Hashanah is Kav, then automatically the halva is completely null and void. Bein halva shenasa kodem hashmita, bein halva shenasa b'shenasa shmita. Even if the halva was made before the shmita, I mean that's your classical case of shmita, comes along the end of the shmita cycle, the end of the shmita year, and it breaks up that chol. Now, I want to raise an interesting question over here. What would be if a person gave a time period for this loan? He extended the loan for a period of time, and that period of time would culminate before Shemitah. In other words, let's say that I, at the beginning of the 6th year, extended you a 1-year loan in such a way that at the end of the Shemitah year, at the end of the 6th year, or let's say even at the beginning of the 7th year, at the end of the 7th year, I would have rights to collect my chol before the din of Shemitah's Ksafim kicks in. But I haven't yet gotten a chance to collect the chol. That's one question that I want to ask. And the second question I want to ask you is, what happens if I as the malva were under the mistaken impression that the chol would reach its fruition before Shemitah would kick in? And Bezin went ahead and they decided to change the calendar months in such a way that now I can't collect the chov until after Shemitah. That's called the Ibur Shana. So Bezin added another month, and what would have been Rosh Chodesh Av, but Rosh Chodesh El, now turns out to be Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. So now my chov is not collectible until Shemitah, and Shemitah is going to break up the chov. But I was under the misimpression that my chov would be collectible a full month before Shemitah. Did I know that Bezdin was going to decide to change the calendar year? In other words, what I'm asking is, to what extent?
I mean, they said it's going to be a Shana Ubar, and then they changed it before.
Yeah, and they changed it in such a way that now I can't collect my chov because it comes to fruition. What's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, it comes to fruition after Shemitah. It becomes due after the Shemitah. And now I can't collect the chol. But that was only because of a move, a decision that was made on the part of Beis Din subsequent to my extending the loan. I gave you the loan at the time when the term for the loan would have ended. The loan would have come to full term before Shemitah. Now Beis Din changed the calendar, and because I gave you that full 12 months, now the Shemitah is going to come along and break up the chol. To what extent do we enter into the mindset of the malva? If the malva specifically lent the money in a way thinking that he'll be able to collect the chov. So let's learn on and see if we can come to some answer to these questions. L'shitas chelik min rishonim. Here we're turning over to Kuf Samach Dalid. Asu livos chov gab b'meshach shnas ha-shmita. Interesting. You know, we should make a prosbol according to these minority view, dissenting opinion, at the very beginning of the Shemitah year. Because any chov, even during Shemitah, will be broken up according to this school of thought. It's l'chein yesh nagim, that in fact is a minhag, lasos prosbol, af the erev Rosh Hashanah shel Shemitah. Meaning this erev Rosh Hashanah we should be doing a prosbol. And why? Because we're worried about that opinion that maintains that Shemitah is mishamed achov even during the Shemitah itself. Shmias mishametes afilum hisna hamalva. What if the malva made a tnai? And he said, you know what, I'm giving you this loan on a condition that Shemitah will not be mishamed achov. Does the malva have the ability, this is very much touching on some of the questions we asked earlier, to control the alpha, a set of alpha which is no power of Shemitah to break up that alpha? And you and I would have said, well look, the loaf accepted these conditions, and therefore he waived his rights to break up the chol. So if the malva and the loaf both together are very happy with this situation, it should be valid. And the answer is no, it's not valid. Not in the way it was formulated in this case. Lo teshameh, he says, shvi'is meshametes. Why? And this is a famous principle you remember of Masnal Mashikosav Tnoba. We don't allow you to create something, an institution, a halos, and design it in such a way that it's against the Torah law. The classical case of Masnal Mashikosav Torah is in Gemara Kedushin. Does anybody remember that case? I'm just testing your ideas here. Hareyat mekudeshesli almanas she'en lach alai sher ksus v'yom. He wants to be married to this woman in a marriage in which she gave up her rights to the basic obligations that are incumbent upon a husband in Jewish marriage. He can't do so. He cannot change and alter Ishus, which is the relationship to the husband, the way the Torah designed it. A man wants to create a halva, and his halva is impervious. It's not exposed to the vulnerability of Shemitah's self. He wants to change the rules of the game. He can't do so. But that's not always true. In fact, the Malva could do so, but he has to change the lingo. He has to tone down the formulation. Aval in Hisnu Halova Vamalva Benayim. Shalova lo yishamet esachov b'shvius tno kayin sheperush tnai zeu shalova mechayves atzum b'kesef shator lo chivoso. Says the halacha here, and we'll see it also in the Rambam, that if the lov and the malva formulated in such a way that enachinami, the chov itself lends itself to shmita, the shmita would come and break it up, but nevertheless the lova accepts upon himself a voluntary obligation to pay, he's mechayev atzmo b'kesef, even though the Torah says he doesn't have to pay, he himself committed himself to pay, is v'dover ze'en isur. The Torah didn't prohibit the loaf and enjoin him from obligating himself, committing himself to pay when he doesn't have to pay. The yachal adam lekavolas al atzmo ischayus kaspin bechol tnaishim b'momen kai. So again, if the malva wants to extend the loan and recreate the wheel, and he wants to organize the alva and define it in such a way that it doesn't lend itself to shmita, that he can't do. But if the loaf comes forward and he agrees to the alva under the condition that he, the loaf, will pay back the chov, despite the fact that Torah says he doesn't have to pay it, that's binding, and that becomes a tnai shebamom. A tnai shebamom means where I accept upon myself willingly self-imposed obligation to pay something which, according to the Torah law, I don't have to pay. And that I can do. There's a chiddush here. You might think that if the loaf is willing to give a gift to the malva, and the Torah doesn't obligate the lova to pay because of Shemitah, that's fine. You know, the lova can give a gift. But he's not giving a gift here. The lova is taking the money from the malva as a halva. And all the dinim of halva kick in, and the chiyuv of piron chov kicks in. Does he have the right to change and alter the dinim, the klolei halva, and agree to pay back this loan? Again, if he agrees that I'll give you a gift, you know, you're a nice guy and I'll give you a gift, that might come under the law of ribbons. I don't know if he can do that, but even assume he could do that, that's one thing. That's a horse of one color, but he's a horse of a different color. He's not saying, the law is not saying, I declare my commitment to give you a gift, you know, I'm going to pay you money, you know, send you a check gratis. No, the lova is saying that I take upon myself this chov to repay this loan, this debt, even despite the fact that Shemitah was Meshamitah. Then basically he's changing the laws of Shemitah. Why is that acceptable? And that's called Kol Tanai Shemom and Kayom. Whereas the case where the Malva made such a Tanai and says, Almanash Shalot Shemitani Vishmiyas, he can't do so. It's called Masna Mashkosu B'Torah. In other words, at the end of the day, we still really don't have a clear-cut answer to the following question. Can the people, in this case the Baal and the Lova, change the Shemitah law with regard to the Chov? Can they create a Chov that is impervious to the law of Shemitah?
It's not really changing it. You're adding something on a personal business.
Okay, so if the Baal does so and the Lova accepts it, why can't he do that? Now, if we're going to say that business arrangements are above the law, so to speak, because you and I can decide how we want to divvy up that money, then what difference make when the malva does it, when the lova does it? That's unclear. In other words, again, if the lova didn't accept it tonight, and the lova says, you know what, under those conditions, I don't want your money, that's one thing. The lova can decide, he declines on the loan. But the lova, at the end of the day, accepted the loan with the condition of the malva, and yet, Shemitah is meshamet, and the lova doesn't have to pay it back, because it's masa amashkos in the Torah. Just like in the case of Ishus, you can't tamper with the issue, so too in the case of Chovos, you cannot recreate the laws of Chovos and alter them to fit your desire. Well, If the lover says, you know what, forget about the law of Shemitah, I'm going to have to pay you despite the Shemitah. If he was giving a gift out of pocket, that's one thing, but if he's saying, I'm paying you back this chob, because this chob is still binding, how did the lover create a binding chob which the Torah doesn't recognize? The Torah says this chob is not binding. So I leave you with that question. I'm just saying it's really...
Like, in terms of, let's say, any contracts with real estate, it's what's written in the contract. It can't go against the law, but it, right? It can't go against the law of the country, but if it's an addition, why can't they make that binding upon them?
Right, so you're asking a question on the Malva, right? In the first case, the Malva made that condition, the law accepted that condition, and yet the condition is totally null and void. Why can't the Malva say, Kol Tanai Shel Roav Kayim, I want to give you Alva, and the laws of this Alva are not the same as the rules that govern every Alva? Why can't the Malva do that? You know, that's what's unclear. There's some sort of fundamental distinction between the first case when the Malva made the Tanai, and the second case where the Lova accepted upon himself a Chov which is impervious to Shemitah. That's not clear. Okay, next. The Lova comes after Shemitah and decides, you know what, I'm going to pay back the Malva anyway. So the Malva just has to say the following, Mishamet Ani. I have no legal ownership over this chov and rights to collect the chov. Ukvar niftarta mimeni. The Malva tells the Lova, you don't have to pay me. In that case, the Malva lived up to the Torah requirements, he fulfilled the mitzvah of Shemitah, and he doesn't want to accept the money of the Lova. He's notifying the Lova of his rights to keep the money, it's a gift right now, henceforth, because the law of Chov and the Shibud of the Chov is no longer in existence. So that's when the Malva notifies the Lova. He's a tzaddik, the Malva. But in Omar al-Lova, now the Lova turns around and he says, Afal pichim, ritzoni shetekavil, I feel very comfortable. I'm sorry, I feel very uncomfortable letting this money go when I know that it's your money, it was hard-earned money on your part, you were tzaddik for lending me the money. I still want to pay it back. So the law is now the tzaddik. So the law is yachal ha-malva l'kabalas ha-kesef. In such a case, the malva is allowed to receive that money. He would not be violated, because again, he said to the law that your rights are mishamet ani, that the chov doesn't exist, kar niftar t'imeni. The Malva fulfilled his obligation. He did his due diligence, and that's it. Now the Lova decides, even so, I want to pay you, I'm feeling very uncomfortable about this, then the Malva is allowed to accept the money. Shapir shadvaru shalova rotza letitam lova matar. See, this halach I understand, as opposed to the previous halach. In this case, the Lova is taking money out of pocket. The chov is completely gone. The Malva himself declared Meshamed Ani Kfar Niftar to Mimeni. Then the Lova decides to dig into his pocket and give something. Okay, he gave you a gift. The Chov is gone, he gave you a gift. That's fine, we're not changing or altering the laws of Halva. However, in the previous case, where the Lova himself says that despite the law of Shemitah, I'm going to allow and what's the word I mean? Lasher, how do you say in English? To fortify the loan, you know, give it the power to empower that loan, that chov, to exist despite the Shemitah. If you're applying the principle called Tanai Shemam and Kayim, okay, but then you should apply it to the Malva. Hamachzir chov she'ovra lo hashvius, and the fact that the Lova wants to pay back this money, even though he doesn't have to, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Ruach chachamim nocha hemen. This is a midah of tznius, a midah of anova on the part of the Lova. He has hakaras hatov. He feels compelled to want to give the money back. That's a very, very good and laudable attribute. Dinim elu amurim gam bezman hazeh im hamalva lo asa prosbol. So in our time, if the malva did not write a prosbol, he didn't sign a prosbol, then all these dinim apply today. And they'll apply even in chutzlar. Now, if you write a prose bowl, basically you're circumventing the mitzvah of Shemitah, which is okay because the Malva wants to get his back his money, but on the other hand, he's forfeiting a mitzvah. Is there any way where the Malva could sign a prose bowl and yet at the same time still salvage the mitzvah of Shemitah? And the answer is he could do some sort of a formal, almost like a fictitious kind of thing. What does he do? Malva lechaver schum mu'at. He extends a loan for a very small amount. You know, he gives him a buck. And olav lo yochel prosbo. And they don't include that extra dollar in the prosbo. And now, the halva will be mishumat. You know, Shemitah will come, and it'll be mishamit the chov. In such a case, even if the lova comes back at the end of the Shemitah cycle and the prosbo is valid and he says, you know, I have to pay you back, I want to pay you back not only the $1,000, I want to also add the extra dollar, at that point the Malva says, regarding the extra dollar, mishamit amin. I'm not going to accept the extra dollar. But zekiyeh mitzvah Shemitah. In other words, what he's saying is that we should still train ourselves to do mitzvahs. And even if it's a perfunctory, and who are you fooling, you know, well, come on, let's be serious, as a joke, you're giving him a dollar. But nevertheless, at least to feel, you know what, I recognize, I acknowledge the mitzvah of Shemitah, the Shemitah breaks up the chov, I'm not going to collect this chov, mishamit ani, and he'll get schar for that mitzvah of Shemitah. Yesh lahasnos b'shas halva shezman per ona yia lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Right, in order to circumvent the law of Shviz, which you have, we'll soon see, you have the option of the prosbo, make sure that you designate that the termination of the loan is before Rosh Hashanah. Because if it's after Rosh Hashanah, then Shviz is already mishami techo.
What happens if you made that condition and the guy didn't pay way too much?
Right, so that's what we're going to see in the next page. Right? What if he hasn't paid yet? Next, also limana, there's a lav da oraisa to prevent yourself from halvos kesel chaver mechashah shegol yifal lo v'schovah l'achrei shnas hashmita mishamet. If there's a fear that the lover will not pay back the chov until after Shemitah, the malva therefore doesn't want to expose himself to that vulnerability that he may lose his money because the lover hasn't paid back and Shemitah is going to be mishamet, and therefore, you know what, he decides, I'm not going to give you the loan. That is not allowed to do. In such a case, he violates this law, and he's called Bliyah. Okay, now he has a list on the next page of three cases where there's no din of Shemitah. And he adds Schar Sucker as a fourth case, but that's not really a chol. First of all, let's say the loan was extended for enough of amount of time that the Zman Piron is after Shemitah. For example, let's say by definition, if I extend you a 10-year loan, then somewhere within the 10 years, the 7th year comes to be Meshamit Lechov. So in such a case, there's no law of Shemitah. In a 10-year loan, by definition, there's no law of Shemitah. Why? Because the loan only becomes due after the Shemitah. Shemitah can only be Meshamit Lechov that theoretically could become due before the Shemitah. But here, siyamat kufu li'achar shnasa shmitah v'ein halva mishamet. Meaning, the mitzvah of shmitah, in which the seventh year breaks up the chov, means it breaks up the ability of the malva to be tovea to claim payment of the chov. If the malva is robbed of that, is bereft of that possibility, if the malva doesn't have a tviyah to be nogeis the chov, meaning to collect the chov, then Shemitah doesn't break up the hand of the Malva to collect the chov. Meaning, what is Shemitah? Shemitah means, I as the Malva come to be Noges. Noges means to collect the chov. I'm pressing you to pay back the chov. And the Torah says, I'm cutting off your hand, so to speak. I'm cutting off your ability to collect that chov. But if you yourself, the Malva, have no ability to collect the chov, because you extended the loan to a time period beyond the Shemitah, then that chov doesn't lend itself to Shemitah. And here he explains it in the second paragraph. If within that time period the malva forfeited his rights to collect, to claim that chov, then it's not a lo yigos. Lo yigos means that the Torah is saying don't collect the chov that you have rights to collect. Shemitah is going to break up your ability to collect the chov that under normal conditions, if not for Shemitah, you would be able to collect the chov. Here, the malva cannot even collect the chov because the chov only becomes due after the Shemitah.
And what if it's 120 payments due over 120 months?
So the last payment...
And there's a Shemitah in the middle, right in the middle.
So the last, so the last 60 payments, I guess, in that case, are like the 10-year loan. Meaning, he, the Malv, had no rights to collect those 60 payments until after Shemitah would kick in. So those 60 payments would not be subject to the law of Shemitah insofar as the Malv has no rights to collect them. That would be equivalent to Lachar Esser. But the first 60, which become due before the deadline of Shemitah, before Rosh Chodesh Tishrei of the eighth year, those 60 payments would be completely nulled and void.
Wow.
Case number two, a Malva or Mashkon. Remember, we said that there are three levels of a Malva. There's one level where the Malva doesn't have much recourse unless the Lord is an honest guy. He extended to Balpeh without even a shtar. On the other polar extreme, the Malva is jacked up to the highest level because he has a Mashkon, he's holding on to a collateral. And in the middle, we have the Milva Bishtar. So in the case of Malva Mashkon, Ein Shvius Mishametis. So it really is a very simple way, so to speak, to circumvent the law of Shemitah. If the Malva asks the Lova, or demands of the Lova, to cough up a collateral which will be now possessed by the Malva. Of course, if the Lova has the money to pay back his cloth, he redeems his Mashkon, and then the Malva has to return the Mashkon. But in this case, we're trying to circumvent the law of Shemitah, that we can do because the Malva possesses the Mashkon. Why is a Milva al Mashkon not subject to the Shemitah law? And the answer is, Shah Mashkon, Mashiva al Zazuki ilhi gvuya. In other words, Lo Yigos means that the Shemitah tells the Malva, don't collect the Chov. But what if the Malva already collected the Chov before the Shemitah kicks in? From the very get-go, from day one, the Malva has collected his Chov. Because Halacha is Bal Chov Kone Mashkon. He owns the Mashkon, and that Mashkon is his. With, again, there's a right... There's a clause here that grants the Lova a right to redeem it, to force the Malva to sell it back to him, so to speak. But in the meantime, the Chov is paid up because the Malva is holding on to the Mashkon.
So what's the difference? If it's the collateral is not worth the full amount.
Right. So he says the font. The Nikrash Aschum Alvoko for me Erech HaMashkon. Let's say that he lends him 1,000 and the Mashkon is only worth 500. Then on the extra increment, the 500 that's not covered by the Mashkon, that's a regular alva. The Yesh Cholkin V'Omer, there is one opinion, Shekol Alva Sheyesh Lav Mashkon, Ein Nishmetes Klal. That somehow the Mashkon has an impact on the entire Chol, even though the Mashkon is only worth a fraction of the Chol. Aflo Chelik, She'ein Kedei Yit Shmita, doesn't have the power to break up even the increment above and beyond the value of the Mashkon. Because in such a case, the Mashkon changes the nature of the Milva. The Milva becomes a Milva Sheishol and Mashkon.
What about checks?
Oh, checks comes under the next category. This is called HaMocher VaHaKofa. Ashrat, what we call it. Okay, so we'll see about checks, but the actual case is you buy on credit. Okay, what does it mean buy on credit? I'm not giving you the full value now. I don't pay you up now. This is the buyer. I forgot to say the buyer, right? The buyer comes into a store and he incurs a debt. Why does he incur a debt? Because he wants to buy something and he doesn't have the money to pay it. So he buys by kofa. I want you to know, Rabosai, in Israel, in the Israel that I remember, you know, because I'm here a long time already. The banker in this country was really the supermarket guy. Not the supermarket guy so much, but the makolet guy. You know, every town. Yeah, every little shtut and every little neighborhood had its own makolet guy. And basically, he was the bank who lent you money. You know, you didn't go to a bank to borrow money, you went to the makolet guy. So you didn't have enough money to pay for the milk, eggs, and bread. So what you did was you bought it by kofa. And now basically you owe him a debt. And he trusts you because, you know, he writes it down, but he trusts you because, you're one of his local guys. You know, you're davening in the same shul, whatever it is. So that's called Mocher Bakofa. And Velokovas Man Lakone Mosai L'Shama. Again, if there was a specific date on which the the lokeach, the buyer, would have to cough up and pay up his debt, then we'd have to get back into the discussion that we had in number one over here. What was that date? Was it before Shemitah or after Shemitah? But let's talk about a case where there was no kvius. They didn't determine and agree upon a specific date. It's like an open-ended loan.
Well, they said once you get to 1,000 shekel, you have to pay. So, like, there's no date, right? It's like...
So there's no date, right? So if there's no date, then ein shvius meshametes sachov. Why? Hatam lefi shederach hakinvani lahakif litkufa arucha. The ein darkol lingos miyat. V'hami ki ilu kavalos maliachar shmita she ein shmita meshametes. In other words, the mocher in this case in his mind. And this is sort of the understood agreement, even though they didn't spell it out explicitly, between the buyer and the seller, is that, you know what, I'm not going to collect this from you. I'm not going to press you. I'm not, you know, when you get around to it, you know, when you finally get a raise in your salary, you know, you'll pay me back. So it's as if there's an unspoken agreement here that this debt will not be collected until after the Shemitah. Aval im kavuz man peiron. But if they set a specific date, ha'rezed nechshav l'chol, it means that the mocher now, in this case, becomes like a regular malf, in which he has the rights to collect the chol. And whenever he has rights to collect the chol, Shemitah comes around and breaks up those rights, terminates them. V'yesh omrim sha'afim osach en vani cheshbon shal chobos ha'kone, ha'rezed yotzav mechlal ha'kofas ha'chanuz sha'en en ishmetes, v'nech shkichov rogil ishmetes. This second opinion really makes this entire category almost useless. It's almost theoretical. Because in according to the second opinion, this Yesh Omrim, the only time that a mocher ba'kofa is ein shmitas mishametes is only when he didn't calculate how much the lokeach owes him. Meaning, in your classical scenario, what happens is that the mocher has almost like a computer file, so to speak, for every single client of his, and he punches into the computer exactly how much the lokeach owes him on anything, right? So what happens is that the calculator automatically adds this all up, and the reason that's done. It is first and foremost because the lokeach has to know how much of a debt has he incurred, right? Can he endlessly buy on credit at some point? What time is it? Ooh, time flies. At some point, you know, the lova has to, the lokeach has to get his act together and start paying back, you know. Otherwise, he's going to have to take a gemach from someone else. So assuming that the mocher calculates on a regular basis exactly how much of a debt the lokeach has incurred over the course of time, then that's not called hakofas hachanus, that's not called chanus ba'hakofa, and it goes back to be subject to the law of Shemitah, because in such a case, we understand that the malva, or in this case, the mocher, is going to finally say, you know, higia mayim enough, this is miserable, you've got to start paying me back. So therefore, since he has rights to pay him back, and that's what we anticipate he's going to demand those rights, therefore Shemitah comes to break it up. And finally, number four, with this we conclude, is schar sofir. Let's say, for example, you work for me, you're on my payroll, and I'm the employer, and you're the employee. And now, lo and behold, I haven't paid you this month's salary, and Shemitah came around. So does that mean that you, as the employer, are out in the streets, you can't collect your salary? The answer is no. That's not called a halva. See, here it's radically different than the first three cases. This is not called a halva. This is called schar sofir. It comes with a whole different mitzvah, a whole different halach, and Shemitah has no power. Oh, okay, so you know what, if you don't mind, because I think Mincha's in another 2 minutes, it's no longer at 1:15. So if you take a look at this, we'll complete our whole chapter here. What happens if the Malva takes his shtaros, and he brings it to Bezdin, and he says to Bezdin, you collect my chov. In such a case, Shemitah is circumvented. And this is even before Hillel Hazokain came up with the Takana of Prozbol, this on a Doraisa level, even Bisman Shayovel Noeg, and therefore Shmitas Ksafim is Doraisa, you can circumvent the law of Shemitah by giving your shtaros, by the Malva handing over the shtaros to Bez. But again, as I said before, it's a very complicated thing for the Malva to give over his shtaros. You know, let's say he picks up and he moves, he relocates himself, or a million other scenarios. But in any event, in theory, that's the way to circumvent the law of Shemitah and force the lover to pay up despite Shemitah. Shereshvias mishametis rakhovus shebein ono lechavera. In other words, Beis Din here is a goof. They are an entity and not an individual. And as such, they are a corporate entity that have rights to collect a chov despite Shmias. The law of Shmias is formulated by the Torah under the words Asher yelucha es achicha, meaning you as a malva not allowed to collect from achicha. The Rambam writes here that achicha is to the exclusion of a god. But achicha also means the exclusion of Beis Din. If you can collect your chov from achicha, comes the Shemitah and breaks up your rights to collect the chov. But if the chov is now handed over to Beis Din, they become the bailim, the owners of the chov. They collect the chov. That's fine. That's not called achicha, and that's beyond the pale of Shvius. Okay, then we'll stop here. Baruch Hashem, we covered the whole parak. We didn't cover the whole parak in Rambam.
So if I give somebody 10 head checks, buy something for 1,000 shekels, no ribbis at all, and it's for 10 months, and he's holding all 10 checks.
So
and he puts in one every month. It's already predated. And he holds all 10 checks.
So you want to know which meet to be mishamed checks.
Right.
Yeah, but each check will become due. Just one second.
Due in Shemitah on the spot. It's either like a mashkon.
Yeah, right.
It's already prepaid.
So let's just assume, for argument's sake, that each check becomes due on the 15th of the month,
fine,
the Hebrew month. I'm just giving a scenario. That last check, for example, becomes due on the 15th of Tishrei, or let's say it's Erev Sukkot, right? So that last check, insofar as it's a debt that you're collecting, and that debt came to maturity on the 15th of Tishrei, the 1st of Tishrei will come and break up that chov. The only reason I hesitate and I'm not 100% sure is, can we view the check as a mashkan? Meaning, does that check have any value and it can be sold on the market?
Yes.
And if it does have value,
oh yes.
If it does have value, then that might be like a mashkon where the malve is holding on to something which he can sell now, even before the due date on the check. And we said that a malva al mashkon is ein shmita v'shemetz.
Shkoyach. In Israel, they have that. They sell checks.
Really sell checks.
They sell their checks. They have to send.